Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Grey's Academy, your favorite Grey's Anatomy podcast on the internet. I am one of your hosts, Kelsey.
And I am one of your hosts, Carmen, and it is a beautiful day for a podcast. And I think we would be remiss if we didn't start the episode just very quickly to address a couple of things that are happening in the world right now. We just want to say, number one, today we are recording on September 11th. So to all of the people affected by the events that happened on 9/11, never forget. That's, you know, as Kelsey eats a snack.
Sorry, I'm hungry.
And we may talk about this in a second here, because I still remember to this day where I was when that happened. But and then also the violence around the Charlie Kirk assassination, the murder, the gun violence, whatever it is you're calling it, domestic terrorism, political violence, etc. Our hearts go out to his children and his wife.
Also the families of the people in the Colorado school shooting.
Yes, I did hear about that.
Yes, they had to interrupt the shooting news with more shooting news because America
has a gun problem. Hopefully we keep having that conversation. But 9/11, I was in fourth grade. I think I was reading an article where it was talking about how children, like younger children around our age, like that was our first time getting thrust into the vortex of adulthood, kind of like prematurely. Not like kind of resonated
for millennials.
I didn't think about that.
It was like our first shared experience of crisis. And for our generation, there's just been so many. So it's been super fun to live through that.
Yeah.
I was in sixth grade.
God, you're so fucking old.
I know. You know there are people listening to this who weren't even born when 9/11 happened.
Yeah, it's interesting. 9/11 is one of those things where I think the internet kind of has its own, like people make jokes about it. There's the conspiracy theories. Yeah. They say it never happened.
It was an inside job.
Inside job.
Metal doesn't melt, which is factually incorrect.
Yeah, it's
yes, it does.
Gasoline fuel can't melt, like it burn at a
steel beams.
Temperature hot enough to melt steel beams. And every time I see a controlled demolition of an old building, someone's like, where have I seen this one before? And I'm like, can we just not? Can we make like a rope and not, please? So yeah, it's wild though. And I remember like coming home early and all the chaos around that. But living in the Midwest, we were only affected by the threat of like, oh, this happened and now they're going for the Sears Tower next. Like, you know, stuff like that. So very weird world.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask, is if there was like where you were concerned that Chicago was going to be a target.
Yeah, for sure. And what's weird is like, even to this day, it's so embedded in my memory that I will think every time I walk past the Sears Tower to get back to the train station, to get back to Union Station, I'm like, if something happened and a plane crashed into the Sears Tower right now, could I run far enough to get away from the building if it was falling?
Mm-hmm.
Would there be enough adrenaline in my body to get me away from this situation?
Well, what's
and I think about that every
is
day.
Like, you think falling, you think like this.
Right.
But truly what happened with the Twin Towers, at least, is like And you know what? That kind of is what I was talking about during our cold open, is like, that was, I think, one of the first instances of like witnessing something horrific, and like everyone saw it. Like, the human brain, again, is not like, we are not meant to have to see these things over and over again and have, and like, we it's just like, it's like an active choice to not become desensitized.
Yeah. Yeah.
To seeing something and like seeing the towers fall and knowing that was like thousands and thousands of people whose lives ended, and then so many more millions of people whose lives were immediately impacted and never the same again, because, you know, they lost someone who worked there, they lost the first responders, you know, it's just the ripple effect of it still is resonant today.
Even the survivors, there's survivor guilt, there's survival sickness. There was this article that I read, and again, like, this is not, this particular piece is not a political dig, but people who are worried about what RFK's slashing of the CDC means for healthcare, for some of these people who are still dealing with effects of all the insulation and the toxicity all these years later, right? So anyways, our hearts go out to them. This episode is going to go live on the 12th, but we're recording on the 11th, so we wanted to talk about that really quick. On a more positive note, you might be thinking to yourself, wow, these guys sound great today. They're on their game.
Clarity.
Their voices are just more, even more angelic than usual. That is because we are very proud, as I get a podcast burp, very proud to share that we have really had some incredible conversations with the company Shure, and we are now using their microphones and their in-ear monitors. So if you have any questions, if you're looking to get started with the podcast and you want to get some really high quality tech, we're very proud of Shure. We're happy to oh my gosh, I'm dying.
Okay. You ruined it.
Forget like that never happened. Never forget. We'd be happy to share what we're, you know, using. It's great stuff. And if you watch the videos, you'll see a big white Shure logo on there. And then even our in-ear monitors now are from Shure. So very proud of that. We'll talk more about that.
We sure are.
Yeah. We are sure that you will love this episode. Let's do some shout outs and then maybe some real episode stuff.
Yes, we have a new Patreon. It is Katie.
Hell yeah, Katie.
Thank you so much for joining our Patreon. We hope you enjoy the cold open today and all the other ones you have to catch up with.
Hell yeah. I have, do you have any other shout outs? Do you have any other emails, anything?
That was it.
Let me actually just double check. I don't think there's any new reviews from last time. If you are on the fence about leaving a review or hitting that follow button, that 5-star button, just do it. Do it, please. Figure it out later if you hate us, which you won't. I do want to shout out Jessica. I'm going to just gonna go down my list here. Jessica, Martha, Vanna, Karandeep, Marie, Grace, Stephen, Brianna, Aaron, Etta, Sarah, Santa Silver, and then Megan, Ashley, Hans, Caitlin, and Shanna. And Caitlin. One more Caitlin, Leia, Christian. Some really great Instagram conversations. That's my list.
Good job. Well done. Proud of you.
Thank you.
It's tough because I'm like, there's so many messages that I haven't responded to, and there's so many reels that I'm like, I'm going to leave these unread until I can go watch these. That I'm like having to like train my brain. Like, oh, nope. That's like, I can't shout out Kelsey. She's right here. She's...
Here I am.
Even though she's on my list.
Okay. I think, is that it then?
Yep, that's, yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. This episode is the 16th episode of the 9th season, episode 188 overall, and it is called This Is Why We Fight, and that is a song.
This Is Why We Fight is a song by the Decemberists, I believe. And of course, it's one of those times where when I go to look where my stuff is, and yeah, here we go. The song This Is Why We Fight is off of the album. Pull it up here. Oh my gosh, why is everything called The King Is Dead? And The King Is Dead was released on January 14th, 2011. And it is the sixth album by the Decemberists. It was released on Capitol Records. It did pretty well, the album itself. The song, I'll tell you, the song was just okay, in my opinion. I'm going to give it a 2.5 out of 5 on the Karman score, on the subjectivity score. Objectively, being a part of this album compilation, probably closer to a 3.1, 3.2. But the album itself did pretty well. Here's all the places in the world that it was top 100. It reached number 26 in Australia, number 52 in Austria, number 4 in Canada, number 41 in Germany, number 30 in Ireland, 30 in New Zealand, 18 in Norway, 22 in Scotland, 23 in Sweden, 58 in Switzerland, 24 in the UK, and it reached number 1 on the Billboard 200 for the United States. So it was well received in the United States. I don't think I'm a huge Decemberists or huge The Decemberists fan, but I did not hate listening to the song. I didn't hate their music. They've got kind of like a twangy kind of sound to them, very, very indie-esque. I don't hate it. But it actually made me want to go back and listen to the rest of the album. So that is my review. The Decemberists, great job. This Is Why We Fight. Kelsey, back to you.
Thank you so much. So a couple things. I'm sad that I didn't tell Carmen to record himself watching this one. It was a bummer. This is a really good episode. I should have told them to watch to record this. Also, we're recording it in the afternoon, and I was like, okay, so I like got, you know, organized my childcare, got all my stuff set, ready to do it, and then at this morning at like 10 o'clock, I was like, oh, I should watch this episode. I was literally like, oh, the baby's asleep, I could go back to sleep, and then I was like, wait. I should actually watch it.
I need to watch it.
But then I watched it, so no worries. So this episode was written by Austin Guzman, directed by Jeno Swank. One day
I'm
I'll
sorry.
Figure out how to say
I'm
that.
Sorry. Can you
we've
spell
had this
that?
Person, it's, we've done this so many times.
Have we?
Yes. J-E-A-N-N-O-T is the first name.
Jeno?
Excuse.
This episode is going to be really good, you know.
This is the last name. S Z as in zebra. W A R C.
Zwark.
Zwark. Zwark. Okay. Anyways, this aired February 21st, 2013, to 8.75 million views.
I am so disappointed in the amount of millions of people who are not watching this.
I know. This is and such then, a good episode.
And then I remember, okay, streaming is becoming more prevalent now. The DVR. My family was too poor to have that. So all you rich people out there with your DVRs.
Must have been nice to pause your television.
Yeah. Or skip it to go take a piss or something. I don't know.
And then, okay, the Netflix synopsis is... As news of Seattle Grace's financial issues spreads, Catherine wants Jackson to move to Boston, and the interns fear for their jobs. The inclusion of Catherine and Jackson is a weird choice.
Especially for not the plot twist.
And the exclusion of them trying to get a billionaire to buy the hospital with them.
I'm not going to give my score away this early in the episode because it's not how we do things here at Grey's Academy, right?
Right.
I really like this episode.
It's a good episode. There's it also was, like, overall it's a good episode, but then also there's so many like one-liner moments where I was like giggling out loud.
This also, I think, is probably one of my favorite non-death cliffhangers that I've seen in this show.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's like, what's going to happen? The delivery.
The last line is something that lives rent-free in my head. Oh. I actually think about it constantly.
It is now.
Give your mama a kiss. She just bought you a hospital. Lives in my head rent-free.
I can't. You know, I like Jackson so much, and he's come such a long way in winning me over. And then I'm like, oh, but the nepotism. It's just gruesome, diabolical at best. Okay. So let's, you want to do a quick recap of the episode, like a five second recap, and then we'll jump into whatever topic you want to start with?
Yeah. So this is the episode where they finally by the hospital, but obviously not until the end. The lead up is they're not going to buy it. It's not going to work. They're trying. And Pegasus has come back in order to buy the hospital to sell it for parts. So they're going to like liquidate it. Everyone gets laid off and they're going to like sell all the medical equipment or just reallocate the medical equipment to other Pegasus owned hospitals. So that's happening in the hospital. Out of the hospital, the six and then seven of them are trying to get a billionaire to invest with them to cover the remaining cost and be the majority shareholder in purchasing the hospital. I love this episode. This episode's so good.
Yeah.
The storytelling from like both writing and like the directorial, like the way that the camera like goes back and forth. I don't know. I just felt like it's Pete Gray's, but to be Pete Gray's in an episode where you have so much happening outside of the hospital is really cool.
And to be Pete Gray's with no death.
Yeah.
No one died. I don't think. Right.
But it is still very stressful as an episode.
Oh yeah. It's stressful. It's one of those ones where the drama comes from the story, not the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually prefer the drama of the medicine to the story. Yeah. This one, big fan.
Well,
big,
it's not drama fan. Of like, oh, who's sleeping with who? It's like drama of, will this exist tomorrow?
Right.
So where was your head up? Like, did you think that it was just not going, like they were just not going to have the hospital anymore? Like, what were you thinking was going to happen? Because it's the last 60 seconds. Where they saved the hospital.
I knew something was going to have to happen. And the second that Catherine came into the picture with Weber, I'm like, oh, she's involved somehow. Something's going to happen. And I will also tell you that once Weber talked to her about it in bed, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay, so the Harper Avery Foundation is going to buy the hospital.
But again, that's still like the last 3 minutes.
Yeah. I get it. Yes, you're right.
So when the rich man was like, no.
I here's the thing. I didn't watch this show live, so I know that there's 11 more seasons. I didn't once think that the show was going to end or the hospital wouldn't get sold, and then they would spend a season as their farewell tour. I imagine a lot of people felt that way when they were watching it live. Like, the hospital's, it's not going to work out. Okay, so this is the next season's their last season, or maybe they just play it out, or... You know, it's been 9 good seasons. We're finally going out, you know?
Yeah.
But there was, I was never worried about the hospital getting bought by someone. I just didn't know what that was going to look like until mm-hmm. it materialized in the last 60 seconds. I will also tell you that I thought, because unfortunately I have a very skewed negative perception of billionaires, that he was just going to cut them out completely and buy the hospital outright.
Well, when they're having the conversation and he realizes that they want in on it, that feels like the thing that pumps the brakes for him.
Yeah.
So that was confusing to me. Let's just start with the side of the story.
Yeah, let's just talk all about let's talk all about the sale shit.
So... at the beginning of the episode, it starts with them, like, they're going over their pitch. They're like, we got this meeting with this billionaire who, I think they're implying he's, like, in tech. Again, this is 2013, so I think conceptually, people are like, that's the only way you can have this much money. The internet. And so they're like, oh, he's the, you know, the only thing he doesn't have a hand in is like medical tech. So this is a really great way to like round out his portfolio, blah, 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 all this stuff. He's in Seattle. So, you know, they're going back and forth talking about the pitch and who's going to deliver what information. So they do it and they're pitching to like the 2013 finance bros, which are like not as bad as the 2025 finance bros, yeah. For sure.
The dot-com bubble bros are definitely different than the Silicon Valley bros.
This is like Mark Zuckerberg in the beginning of The Social Network with like his hoodie and flip-flops.
Before he cuts out Andrew Garfield.
Yeah. How dare he? So then they're like, they have to pitch to them, and then they call up to their finance people, and then those finance people push it up to actual Julian Crest, founder of Crest Toothpaste.
Yes.
And so
toothpaste mogul Julian Crest. What's the other toothpaste? Colgate. Man,
Colgate, not, Oral-B.
Not to be confused with Julian Colgate, his arch nemesis.
And their sister.
Oral.
Juliana Oral-B.
The B is for her married name.
B brushing teeth.
Wow. That was really good.
Thanks.
Always be brushing your teeth.
And so, yeah, so they get the meeting with the first guys, then they're like, what was that? And they're like, this phone's gonna ring any second.
Well, hold on, before even that, it is funny to watch the young dudes be so awkward and
unimpressed.
Stan really does make it sound like they're going straight to Julian Crest. And if I was those people giving the presentation, I'd be like, Stan, you really needed to, like, that... We could have built our presentation around knowing that. That's key information.
That the audience matters.
You dingle, you know? Oh, goodness. And then the cliffhanger with the title card, I think, is the phone ringing.
Yeah. It's going to ring any minute, and then it cuts to the title card with the cell phone ringing noise. So drama. So Grays. I love it. So they get the next level meeting. They meet with those people. It's finance people who are asking for like these numbers and things that mean absolutely nothing to me and sound like a nightmare, but is like actually just what Michael does for a living. And so they, and Stan luckily is prepared. He's good at his job. He has all that for them. So they look at it. She's like, I'm going to text Julian. And then just puts the phone down and they all awkwardly stare at each other. And then it makes noise because... It's 2013 when your phone still made noises. And so she's like, oh, unfortunately he's going to Dubai, which how was that not already known information?
Yeah.
But you can like he can fit you in 15 minutes this afternoon. Great. Okay.
Well, so, I just want to say in that scene too, when they ask for the financials, they all kind of look panicked. Like at first I was thinking they don't have the financials, but they stole it. So did they not steal enough of the financials? What are they doing? And then Stan just whips out the brochure, and I'm like, oh, okay, so they have all their bases covered. They've done all of the right work. I was nervous that their unprofessionalism was going to be one of their, like...
Undoings,
yes.
Yeah, I think, and again, you know, this comes back later, it's like the fact that they're all doctors. And, like, and it goes back to what Christina said a couple episodes ago when they started talking about it. It was like, you don't know all the stuff that goes into running a hospital.
Right.
Even like as a chief, there's still got to be so much on the other side of it. I don't know. It be crazy.
It do be.
I love this storyline, but it is batshit insane. So insane.
And the waiting for the texts, and I think there was two texts, and they're like, they all lean Dubai. Forward, and they're like, ooh,
yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's like very, this episode's very theatrical in a lot of ways, and I love it. They're like, cool, great, we're going to meet him later this afternoon. So they meet with him in the afternoon.
Wait, pause before that. Sorry. There's a scene that happens in between that and him meeting, them meeting. Uh-huh. They're outside, and they're all like panicky, right? They're like, we're not going to get it. It's not going to happen. Or what do we do now? Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, because they find out about the Pegasus thing.
I think so. Because Yes. So in between that, should we talk about this all like cohesively, or do you want it to? Okay,
that's fine.
So in between this, Heather overhears
Cahill
talking to the board of directors lady about they're going to sell the hospital, they're going to strip it for parts. Cahill is basically backstabbing everyone. They don't know it. Owen is totally not involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then she tells, I think, Meredith about it, or she tells Bailey
first.
Yeah,
she was on the phone with Meredith.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. And then when they're talking about it, Callie basically she shits on it. She's like, oh, all this boring crap, blah, blah, blah. And then she looks at Stan and says, no offense. And when Stan goes, I think it's interesting. I never felt more like a Stan in my life than when he's like, the numbers are interesting to me, you know? And I'm like, yeah, I love this shit. You know, give me a brochure of data. Let's talk about it.
That's literally like Michael will show me. He's like, well, this is the thing I've been working on. And it's like 600 sheets in one Excel document. And they all like are talking to each other and doing math with each other. And if you change like one thing, everything changes. And I'm like, this is my literal nightmare. When I tell you there's a reason that I have a theater degree and not a fucking math degree.
Yeah, that's so funny. Anyways, I had to share that. And even just the way he said it, he's like, I think it's interesting.
Like, that's fine. I think people who are in that industry have to know if you're not. No.
You have to be self-aware of how boring it
my
is
thing
to most
is like
people.
I do listen to Michael talk about it because I'm like, he'll listen to me talk about like decorating a wedding venue. But I'm also like, I listen to it and I'm like, it is like you are speaking another language.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like I truly like you could have made up everything you said and showed me like with this. And I would be like, yeah, sure. That's fine. That's must be right. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you have this job because someone has to do it.
Someone has to do it.
Can't be me.
Yeah. That's funny. That's
really
funny.
With math. I've given up on math. I've moved on.
I put that when I graduated, I said no more math.
He said, "I'll see you in hell."
Oh, goodness. Okay, anyways, and then after that scene is when Heather tells Bailey and then it kind of spirals from there.
Yeah. So Heather tells Bailey and Bailey's like, of course, don't tell anyone. She immediately tells everyone.
Yeah.
Also, she has a new haircut and Leah's back.
Love Heather's haircut.
Yes.
And actually, Leah kind of was fun in this episode.
Yeah, she wasn't bad. She made her likable.
Yeah, she had some scenes where she was, well, we'll get to that one scene with Steph. We'll get to that later.
Okay, so then they go into the meeting with Julian, and this is, I feel like, kind of a tropey thing where they like have a meeting with someone, right? And this person like seems really distracted. They're doing so many other things and they're like, oh, they don't even know what we're talking about. They don't care. And then they stop and they're like, I know everything about every single one of you. And like, I can tell you your fucking blood type. And you're like, oh, wow, they are into it. So he's multitasking, you know, people are coming in and out. He's about to go to Dubai, you guys. He's rich.
Very busy, man. He's about to go buy
very
Dubai.
Business. Such billionaire. So that's when he's like, oh, I thought you guys wanted an outright buyer. I didn't. Why would you be buying it? And he's like, none of you are management. Like, you don't have the admin experience. And so then Meredith's like, well, Derek was the chief. And he's like, yeah, for like 5 minutes. And then he quit with no reason. And I'm like, that's a fair point.
Yeah. I think he said surgeons want to do surgery. It just makes sense. And he's like, okay, he's got them all pegged. He knows what he's doing.
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
They don't want that job.
And Arizona called it from day one. So let's give some props to Arizona.
Yeah. And so then he's like, come back when you have like someone with that experience. And so Meredith says Richard and Christina says Owen. So they both go to the hospital to like get those guys on board. And so they finally tell them like what's what. And bless Richard, he's so cute. He's immediately like, I can give you $3 million. And she's like, that is cool. I do need $175 million though.
Yeah, he, I love, and she didn't even finish the words out of his mouth. He's like, I'm in, let's do
it. Like, yeah, because again, he's like been defending them because he's like, I know they're doing something, I just don't know what, but like, I trust them, I trust the process, blah, blah, all this stuff. So I think, you know, good on Richard. I think he's been there. He's held the faith. And so she gets him on board like very immediately, easy. Yeah. Also, we have to pause. First, we have to pause for capitalism. Thank you, capitalism. Now we have to pause because they say that Richard was the chief for 12 years. And to me, that feels insane because I'm like, he was the chief in my mind for like 27 years. Like, there's no way. 12 years to me just feels not like enough. I'm like, 12 years, that's it?
Think about it in his terms, right? That's three presidencies, you know? So
that's not that much.
Three straight presidencies is kind of a lot.
I mean, it's but he was right now.
He was, man, two presidencies is too much right now. He was with them as an intern. So he was with the hospital for, I would assume, 30 years, but 12 of that being the chief is pretty impressive.
I'm not saying it's not impressive. I just feel like in the timeline, also, it's, again, we have to remember Grey's time. So, right, the first three seasons was 1 year.
Man, yeah, that's crazy.
So, and he stopped being chief in season six, or early season six, I think.
So we at least have at least three years of Richard time.
Yeah. So yeah, he was 9 years of being the, I don't know, just because of like who Richard is and like the like mammoth that he is for the hospital, like the way he like carries the hospital on his shoulders for so long, I'm like, he's been the chief for infinity.
Yeah, since the inception of time.
Since the inception of people being chiefs, it's been Richard.
Yeah, he was the first chief.
To me is just, and I'm like, it's just wild. I'm like, no, he's been chief for 100 years. You guys are getting your math wrong.
Yeah, this is why he wants to retire.
Yes, he's tired because he's been the chief for so long.
He's been chief longer than he's even been alive, guys. Literally. It's, the time is...
He was born in a little baby chief coat.
Little baby chief coat. There were a couple of scenes that happened in between Julian Crest basically saying that you guys need management, and mm-hmm. then getting Weber in. And there's one scene that stands out where, so the interns are all talking about it, and then Weber, Jackson, and Alex are like next to them talking about something. And the Weber has already, I think, had this conversation with Jackson about men stand tall in the winds of change and shit. Mm-hmm. So like Weber's been kind of the inside on this, regardless of what he has or hasn't known this whole time. And then there's that scene with, or never mind, that's after that. So I'm sorry. Sorry. I did this all chronologically. So then there's a scene with Weber and Bailey that I really like, mm-hmm. where she's talking about the artificial vein thing. And yeah. She asks him if he wants to scrub in, because it might be their one last time. This is going to be their Hamilton and Washington moment.
One last time.
Yes, queen. We don't have time for it to tell the whole story. but I made a Hamilton reference in California and no one understood it. And I was...
What?
It was unfortunate. When she is kind of having this moment of, I thought I'd be chief of surgery someday.
I know. I love that.
It's hard.
And he like takes her hand.
Yeah. It's a hard scene to watch because from day one, Grey's lore time, we're being spoon fed. Richard's retiring. He has to fill the void with
because he's been chief for so long.
Because he's been chief
100 years,
100,000 millenniums, and then there's Burke and Shepard as the stopgaps for mm-hmm. the assumed next one in line is Dr. Miranda
successor,
champion status Bailey. Yes, successor. Thank you. That was the word I was trying to think of, and as a first-time viewer, I mean, you can definitely think, wow, like, Bailey's never going to get her chance. Her time is never going to come. And it was a really good scene by Richard to comfort her in that moment. Not, like, really giving her feelings full validation or, like, playing into the drama because he knows something's going on. But he's there for her. He's always been this mentor figure for her, and I love that. And last thing I'll say on this before I toss it back to you is, keep the wedding ring still on that man's finger.
I know.
Respect. I don't wear my ring
now. Whilst
in
bed with Catherine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Still smushing the Benedict Arnold over there. But
I think...
Right? It's Benedict Arnold?
Who? What about Benedict Arnold? Benedict Arnold was, yes, like the reference people say when they're saying, like, backstabber.
Yes, thank you.
Yes,
thank you. Who was the one who did The British Are Coming?
That was Paul Revere.
Paul Revere, made famous by the song from that one band.
I think made famous from The British Are Coming.
and the band that I can't remember. That I can't. They're so famous, I can't remember their names. What's the name of that band?
I don't know what song you're talking about.
No, never mind. Hold on. Fuck. Paul.
There's a poem about the midnight ride of Paul Revere.
No. Why is this so fucking dumb? I think I'm mixing up multiple songs.
You're gonna be like, what's that song? And it's gonna be like, do you mean this song from Hamilton about nothing?
No, I'm you know what I'm mixing up? Okay, I'm so sorry. Paul Revere is a song by the Beastie Boys. And in my head, it was the song Tom Sawyer by Rush.
Oh my God. You're doing so good. You're doing amazing.
That was a journey, everyone. I have not had enough caffeine today. I'm sorry. Kelsey, talk about something. I'm done.
What were we talking about, Grey's Anatomy? Okay, Paul Revere. They had the moment and then, yeah, they do the surgery together. With Heather, and then like during the surgery, Meredith calls the OR and she's like, I need to talk to Richard immediately. So he leaves the surgery and goes to talk to her in the medical closet, and that's when he's like, I'm in, I'll give you $3 million. And she's like, thank you, we might take that, but we hopefully won't need it. But what we need is, like, your experience, your resume, your life skills since you've been chief since the dawn of time. And so he's like, of course, absolutely. So, and while that's happening, Christina has found Owen and she's like, is this true? Are you selling the hospital for scraps? And he's like, you're doing this. This is your fault. You're garbage. I hate him. And so
for those of you who can't see this audio podcast, Kelsey was very animated in that moment and it was really entertaining. She really used all 4 years of that theater degree in this moment.
I will hold nothing back when emphasizing how much I dislike Owen Hunt.
Yes, that's fair.
I don't think it needs a visual aid, but that's not gonna keep me from offering one.
Totally.
So
I feel the value add on my end.
You're welcome. And so they run into each other. He's looking for Cahill because he has also just found out this is happening.
And he's so pissed. Because he was the scene with April and
Shane.
Wait, no.
Yeah.
It was right before that, right? With April and Shane?
Yeah.
Crazy. And Shane's like, you see that? He just walked away. He's a little punk bitch. And April's like, he just found out.
Yeah, I'm like, my guy, the inability to read social cues very loud, Shane. Like, figure out.
Thank
like,
you.
He had a mask on and it's still pretty obvious that he didn't know what was happening.
Betrayal real time. Like, Shane, like, come on.
It's just easy to see.
Wrote that in my note for Shane. Like, learn some body language analysis, Shane, please.
Yeah. So, Christina finally pulls Owen aside and she's like, we were trying to buy the hospital. Like, we had to quit to pause the Pegasus sale. They told me if I told you that you could get fired, you could get sued, you could go to jail. And so I couldn't tell you because of non-disclosure agreements. And so then he's like, I don't understand. Like, why can't I help? And she's like, it's okay. We're going to do this. This is our plan. And he's like, I can buy you more time. I can go to the board and tell them I have another buyer. It's okay, because I'm, the whole thing with the non-disclosure was he couldn't keep it as, if he knew, he had to tell the board. So that's what he does. So that's, I think, just to clarify, if anyone's like, why does he get to know now? And it's fine, because he does the thing where if he found out there was another bidder, then he had to immediately tell them that. And so that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So he's not breaking the NDA or whatever. So they, he tells the board, he convinces them. He's like, there's another buyer. It's doctors and it's going to be fine. And Cahill's like, no, Pegasus, hurrah. You have nothing without me. I'm relevant. And so then, you know, Owen convinces them to pause the sale. And then he's at Joe's. While this is happening, they're going back to Crest. And he's like, I can you guys ride with me to the airport? Because I got to go. I only can take two of you. And it's, he takes Derek and Richard in the helicopter, which, do I hate Derek Shepherd? Yes. Was this the best choice to put in the helicopter with him? Easily.
Yeah, absolutely.
Easily the best choice.
He has almost as much charm and charisma as someone like myself, right?
He's got the charm. He's got the charisma. He's got the career. He's got name recognition, published research, like... It just makes sense to me if they have to pick. And, like, obviously they needed Richard because he wasn't in the first meeting. So Richard needs to be there to be like, this is what I'm bringing to the table.
Yes. Can I also say here in this moment, helicopters to me
are
the horses of the sky. Okay. They were designed with one purpose in mind, and it's death and destruction of human life.
You think that's what horses were designed
horses
for?
Horses were designed by God to kill people, just like helicopters were designed by man to kill people.
Are you thinking maybe of Godzilla?
Nope. I'm thinking of horses and helicopters.
I don't know that you're right, but I do know that you're wrong.
Look, all I'm saying is horses killed Superman and helicopters killed Kobe. So let's just really think through this.
Did a horse kill Superman? DC.
No, I think
is this a real thing?
No, it was the actor who played Superman. I think he fell off a horse and he was paralyzed.
Yeah,
he died from playing Superman. He no longer played that. Like the actor careers died. It's an Anakin situation. Like Anakin died and Darth Vader was still there, and Darth Vader killed Anakin.
Right, but the man did not become evil. He actually did a lot.
No, he did. He did
medical research.
Reeves something. Yeah, Christopher Reeves. Anyways, horses, I'm terrified of horses and I'm terrified of helicopters.
I do feel that horses, you have to really respect a horse.
Yeah.
You cannot just be like, it's an animal. Who gives a shit? What's terrifying about horses is they know that they have the power.
Yeah. And the accessibility. I could go get a horse right now.
I drive by horses every single day of my life.
Totally. Yeah.
There are some very close. I don't know if I've shared this. I went to horse camp as a child.
I think you have okay. shared this.
I was not a horse girl because we did not have money for horses, but I did go to horse camp a couple summers, and I love horses. I do love them. But also I recognize that they are a fickle, fickle being with the ability to stomp your skull in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I always was afraid when I had to clean the hooves. Because you have to like stand weird and hold it up, and I'm like, this could kill me.
That's the end. That could be the end of your life right there.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't even see it coming.
I don't know. I mean, I would be looking right at it, but I don't know that horses were created for the death and destruction of mankind. But I respect that you have the fear.
Yeah, it's a pretty intense fear.
But helicopters being the horses of the sky is a delightful sentence that you did just say.
I made sure to read my direct quote because I finished watching this episode at like 2 o'clock in the morning last night, and I needed to remember my full stream of consciousness. And
that's pretty good.
Yeah. Helicopters are the horses of the sky. Put it on a sticker somewhere in our merch shop. But also if you read about helicopters, they teeter with the laws of physics in an unhealthy way. One cog and that whole thing implodes.
Have you ever like looked at a helicopter through like a camera lens.
Like video, so, like a video of a helicopter?
Yeah.
I've watched videos of a helicopter, yeah.
Well, okay, so it's wild because when my dad, the old hospital he worked at, his office window, you could see the helipad.
Oof.
And so one time I was there and it was landing. And so I like went to take a video of it. And like the frame rate on a camera, on an average camera, cannot keep up with the speed at which the helicopter blades spin.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's just going like,
like a wheel on a car if you're like driving next to
it looks like it's just going so slowly and yet it's suspended in the air and it's wild to me every time it is weird. I think there are people that think that helicopters are super super fast. They're not that fast. They just have the ability to go as the crow flies a straight line.
Yeah.
Without, so if something is 5 miles and you don't have to drive 16 miles to get 5 miles, right? It's 5 miles. It flies straight. As long as there's not a like large volcano impeding its path, it can just go that way. And so helicopters, I've never been in one. I don't know that I want to be in one. I kind of do, but I also kind of don't. Like if I went to Hawaii, I would do like a helicopter tour over Hawaii.
Oof, that's, I don't know that I would. I don't know.
It would just be so pretty.
It would be pretty. I don't know. You know, I had this vision where I really want the goal of reaching the top of
Mount Everest,
but I don't want to climb Mount Everest. So I want a helicopter.
Serious.
Everest. Yeah. No. I want a picture on the top of Everest with like a flagpole all bundled up, but I don't want to climb it. So I want a helicopter to like drop me down on like the rope. Take the picture and then I get back up there and I leave. Right.
Okay.
But then I think I just don't want to get on the helicopter. It's scary. You know what's crazy? Scary.
Is the people that do helicopter skiing. Have you seen this?
No.
A helicopter takes them up to like the top ish of a mountain and then drops them and they like have skis on and they like, The helicopter doesn't even fully land. It just goes really low to the ground. And then they jump out and start skiing from the helicopter.
No. So many of my worst nightmares in one. If there was a horse in the helicopter, it would complete the trifecta.
If there was a horse on skis.
It's their hooves. Their horseshoes are just skis.
That's crazy.
Ugh. Goodness, I hate. Oh man, yeah, terrifying. Even mini ponies. I'm like, get your hooves away from me.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways.
So Derek and Richard are in the helicopter with Mr. Crest.
Yes, and they don't show us this, which is a bummer to me. But they get off the helicopter, and you know the ladies are waiting for them and they're like, do they look sad? Do they look happy? Like, how do we know what went down? Blah, 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 all this stuff. And Derek just kind of does like the most subtle head shake. And so he, they didn't do it. And so it cuts to Christina going to find Owen at Joe's and Owen's like, I did it. I bought you time. And she's like, we didn't do it. I'm so sorry. We're all fucked.
You did great, though. Great job, Owen.
Yeah.
He really had the hospital's best interest in mind every step of the way.
He did. Actually, this is, other than when he yells at Christina, this is not a bad Owen episode. I don't like it when he yells at women. Or anyone. But anyway, so they're bummed. And then that's when it cuts to Richard, I believe, talking to Catherine in the bed. And he's like, you know, really thought we would do it. They wanted to buy the hospital. We got so close. Also, wait, the reason that Crest gave them was he just wasn't feeling it.
Yeah, that's insane.
Which, like, I guess if it's $175 million, you get to say no for whatever reason you want, I guess. But it's just crazy to me.
If I'm a billionaire, there's not many things I'm going to say no to.
Right?
$175 million to a billionaire is like $20 to a normal person.
Yeah, it's wild.
So yeah, I don't know that I feel too that I'm not on his side at all. There were a couple things that happened in between that though. There was the scene with Shane and April, which, you know, where he's asking for letter of recommendation, and Owen and Christina are drinking in the house, and then Alex walks in, which we'll talk about in a second, and then yeah, so take us through that. We'll circle back to those, but take us through that scene with Weber and Catherine.
So, sorry, you want me to talk the Weber Catherine scene?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. That's why I just. Okay, so he's like, they were gonna.
I had cut you off, and I was just giving you the.
Thank you.
Yeah,
you're just welcoming me back to my conversation.
Yeah. That's my fault. That's my
fault. As a man, just kidding.
Wow. Carmen doesn't hate women.
Well, I didn't say it that time.
I know, but I know you fucking wanted to. I know
it's been
you wanted
so long since I said it. You're welcome.
Thank you.
So yeah, he's like going. He's
can I interrupt
like,
you really just, quick? So the
oh
thing.
Oh my god!
I'm sorry.
you're so proud of yourself. He tells them, and she's like, just listening to him, you know, he's just going through it all, kind of processing, and he's like, I never thought that I would be, that the hospital would be done before I was. I started my career there. I thought I would end my career there. You know, it's really, you know, thoughtful, everything he's saying. And she's like, how much money did they need? And then he's like, don't worry about it. I mean, that's like the little hand pat. That's what that says to me. Like, don't even worry about it, bud. And so then it cuts to early morning at the hotel and everyone's rolling in and they're like, what the fuck is this about? Jackson is looking good in that gray hoodie, let me say.
Yeah,
he's a pretty man.
Pretty happy with that outfit. That was a nice one.
It's time to tell them all the news, and Catherine's like, it's come to my attention that you need some money, and I have some, and we would love to buy this hospital as long as you let us have a seat on the board. And so they're like, yeah, that sounds super reasonable. And Jackson is then like, why did you do this? Why did you come here to tell me that you're my boss now? And she's like, no, you get to be the seat. You get to be the representative on the board. Give me a kiss. I just buy you a hospital.
Give your mommy a kiss. I just bought you a hospital. I know we talked about this already in this episode. Rent free forever. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's going to be in there forever. The way that everyone immediately starts to look at Jackson though with anger, resentment, immediate disdain.
Like, because they are on good terms with him as a person, as a peer, as a friend.
Yeah.
All these people like him. They know he's a good doctor. I understand the nepotism aspect. I understand they had a vision of buying the hospital and like they have a vision for the way they want to run it. But isn't it good to keep it like in the family? Like,
it's
again,
from
you're
the
keeping,
inside.
It's still a doctor. It's still one of you. Yeah. So it is, they really make it seem like this, like, oh no, he's gonna ruin it kind of situation. So I don't know, it just feels unexplained.
It's also, it is interesting. So you have to think, would they get a whole new board of directors? Would they keep the board of directors for the existing hospital and then Jackson just gets plugged in? I imagine in this situation they would want to have all new board of directors, because the last board of directors went through the whole shady shit of the legal thing, the switching of the airplanes, the Pegasus sale. Like, it's been very intense and not in a good way, right?
Yeah.
So, but also, a representative on the board of director, it's like a volunteer job. Like, you get perks and you'll probably get some shares and you get, like, a compensation piece, but you're kind of like volunteer work. It's a prestige thing. So
it's a resume pad as well.
Yeah. So Jackson being on the board of directors is like really not that big of a deal, especially if they get to build their whole new board of directors.
I think the whole thing is like, as a majority shareholder, like on a board of directors, do you still get, and this might vary place to place, do you still just have one vote, or because you're a majority shareholder, does your vote hold more value? Can you veto people? Can you override other decisions? And that might be like...
That might be where... Yeah, that's fair.
The way that it comes in later, like if they have to set up articles of like formation and whatever, and how that would play out in the ownership piece. It's not 50-50, you know, it's like 60-40, 75-25, like things like that.
Yeah, and that's fair.
As remember business when, owners.
Remember that time we had to set up articles of agreement and board of directors, and we're our own board of directors too. But yeah, no, it's intense stuff. And I get it. It is maybe frustrating. It's not what they wanted, but like they got the money. Catherine could have done worse. Catherine could have been like, oh, and by the way, the board of director that we choose is the guy from the Mayo, right? Like the one doctor who we hated,
oh yeah,
right? Like, so like there could have been worse people. There it could have been,
yeah.
I mean, who's someone we really hated from this show? It could have been
Stark.
Could have been Stark. Man, remember when they got just that guy just disappeared? They never gave us a closure on what happened.
Yeah, I wasn't mad about that.
So yeah, I think it's not that huge of a deal, but when they set up their you know agreements, their board, you know, decision stuff, it'll be more intense. But it is just so crazy, the nepotism. Give your mom a kiss, she just bought you a hospital. That is insane. That is wild. But so, and I cannot overstate this enough. So fucking funny. That is great cinema. Mm-hmm. I was so excited. I really, really wanted to watch the next episode.
Yeah, the visual storytelling along this is also really good because it's like not any crazy cuts or anything. It's just kind of like, I also love that this is like, it's in just an empty hotel ballroom. And like everyone's basically in like PJs. Richard's so excited. Catherine's like,
he was excited.
Still feels like very powerful and professional. And like, I do love that. And, you know, they've let up a little bit. I don't feel like this is the first time when she's like, you know, come work in Boston. When his grandfather was there, it was the same conversation, if you'll remember.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that to me feels very natural, like a natural progression of like, you know, how can I twist your arm into making you do what I want without making you move across the country.
Yeah.
The manipulation from a parent standpoint is insane, but the genius from like the business standpoint of all of them is really, I love it. And I love the way that they conclude this story. But yeah, I was interested to ask you, I'm like, okay, the progression of it, like when this guy says no, and there's, you know, 6 minutes left in this episode, where's your head at of like, what the hell are they going to do? How are they going to get out of this?
Yeah, I really didn't see, again, an exact what was going to happen. How are they going to get out of this? I knew something was going to happen, but I don't think it really clicked to me that Catherine was going to do some shit until they were laying in bed and she asks how much it cost.
Yeah.
I also don't like, I don't think I ever thought how much money could a foundation like the Harper Avery Foundation just have laying around.
I'm in the same of a similar mindset. I'm like, there's no way that just like a quote unquote foundation that's so many different things, like
right
charities, foundations, like all these different things. I'm like nonprofits, for profits, all these different types of organizations. I'm like, they all there's just words and they all can be so similar and also so different at the same time. And like, obviously the medical industry, there's a lot of money there. So to be a successful foundation in that industry, I guess it makes sense. You would have to be sitting on a lot of money.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's wild.
I mean, I guess, okay. So I'm looking at the largest medical nonprofit total operating revenue is, Kaiser Permanente.
I was gonna say that.
And they have over $100 billion in revenue for 2024.
So but not like much.
Yeah.
Casual.
But well, I mean, there's so much money in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
But Mayo Clinic had an operating revenue of $18.63 billion in 2024, for example. So but like what I don't know what like a foundation would have, you know?
Yeah. And I'm like, if it's a foundation, like it has to be for profit because you can't just buy a hospital. like charitably, I feel. Right? If you're like going to spend $175 million as an investor, the whole point of investing is a return on your investment.
Yeah. Well, okay. So hold on. Here's one. So this is I looked for the largest medical foundation nonprofit by country. So I have it in America. The Howard Hughes Medical Institution has an endowment of $27.1 billion.
So yeah, $175 million is
nothing. So I guess that makes sense, but I don't think I ever would have thought about that. So interesting.
Yeah. So well, that we've learned.
We have learned. This is a teaching hospital, damn it.
It so is. I mean, okay, so is there anything else you want to say on that storyline before we cut to the rest of the show?
I think after we start the next episode, I just want to circle back to that April and Shane scene very quickly, but that also ties into their patients. We could just start with their patient after this.
Okay, great. We will start with our patient after everyone's favorite segment.